You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Let's talk more now with attorney Deborah LaBelle, based in Ann Arbor, where she directs the Juvenile Life Without Parole Initiative with the ACLU. She says Michigan prosecutors are ignoring the Supreme Court. Deb LaBelle, welcome.
Thank you.
In essence, the Supreme Court ruled juveniles who've been convicted of these very serious crimes that nearly always involved a homicide are different from adults. Briefly take us to these decisions and explain, how is that? How did the court spell that out?
Well, this decision of the court followed three other decisions of the United States Supreme Court, which said that children are simply different from adults when they commit crimes. They're less culpable, and there are several reasons for that. Their brain is not as developed, and so that the whole things that we know as parents, that impulse control is not there, they don't anticipate consequences in the same way, they're subject to peer pressure, and generally they get into situations where if an adult were in, they might be able to extricate themselves, but children don't have those resources. Second, the court said many of these children are raised in circumstances and communities in which as a 15, 16-year-old, you can't just get in a car, drive away, and get a job somewhere else. You are stuck there. And therefore, the environment, both your home environment, whether it's a dysfunctional family or sometimes the poverty of your community, can impact your options and your choices. And third, the court said, these kids don't know how to negotiate the criminal justice system. They're children. And so they don't take pleas, they don't operate, they don't have resources to hire counsel like adults. And so they get the worst of the worst kind of representation, the most impoverished, whatever assigned counsel comes in, and they don't know how to help, and they often don't have information to give up. So the court said, taking all of these things together, we must treat children differently. And the most crucial point, the court said, is that children are uniquely capable of rehabilitation. Uniquely. And so who they are now at 14, 15, 16, 17 is not who they will be as an adult when they grow up.
Put Michigan in context, Deb, with the rest of the country for us. Michigan has the second highest number of prisoners who were sentenced to life without parole as juveniles. And as we just heard Rick Pluta touch on this in his piece, and I'm looking for your view, why is the state an outlier in this area?
Well, Michigan has been particularly resistant to this for many, many years. First, Michigan set forth in the 1990s some of the harshest packages of laws that punished particularly youth. And at that time, they were talking about urban youth. I mean, I think the racial component of this can't be ignored. They were talking about thugs and gangs and that we had to punish them harshly because they were super predators. Directly opposite to what our court has said. In fact, as we know, that punishing kids does not have a deterrent effect because kids are not reading the newspapers about what happens to people. And even if you do, it's not going to happen to you. And it doesn't serve a purpose to fail our children and then punish them with vengeance. What serves a purpose is to get children to be rehabilitated so that they can come back as an adult and contribute. But Michigan allowed punishment of life without parole, in fact, mandated punishment of life without parole for all first-degree homicide cases. So unlike in most states where you have different degrees and this is only a punishment for someone who commits a homicide, in Michigan, you can be in the car, you can be aiding and abetting, you can commit a robbery and an adult co-defendant commits a homicide, it doesn't matter. The punishment is exactly the same, and neither judge nor jury had a choice in that punishment. It was mandatory.
Or prosecutors.
Well, prosecutors on the front end would have a choice.
Yeah, take us to before the Supreme Court decisions. What discretions would the prosecutors have?
So at that time, any child in Michigan of any age, astonishingly, can be charged as an adult. And that's very unique in this country.
We saw Nathaniel Abraham at age 11 charged.
Exactly. And we have Charles Lewis Jr., who they tried to do it a few years ago when he was 12. But 14, 15, 16-year-olds, a prosecutor could decide to charge those in the juvenile system. Many of them did not because of, I think, public pressure or perceptions about being tough. But many children were, and we did a report on that that showed sort of the racial divide of who goes automatically to adult court and which kids are just having a bad moment and go through the juvenile system.
And you found what?
We found that there's a definite racial bias.
Just last month, Deb, you filed a lawsuit in federal court regarding Michigan's response to the Supreme Court rulings in Miller and Montgomery requiring all juveniles sentenced to life without parole to be resentenced. What's your argument here?
We actually filed the initial suit in 2010 before even the Supreme Court came down and said that life without parole mandatorily for youth was cruel and unusual punishment. When we saw what was happening in Michigan, the court said it had to only be the rare youth that commits a homicide offense, the rare one, the uncommon one, in which the crime evidenced irreparable corruption. And in Montgomery, the court said the child was impossible to be rehabilitated. Impossible. And then just in the last month, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a few cases from Arizona and said, you gave four people life without parole. And Justice Sotomayor said, we said the very rarest. Listen, now we're rare. Now we're very rare. We're uncommon. So we're talking about a unique child that everyone has given up hope on, that there is no possibility of rehabilitation, and nothing that they have done shows any ability to rehabilitate themselves. Come back to Michigan now, and the prosecutors in some counties filed for every single youth in their county. There were youths who didn't even commit a homicide that they're now asking the court to say, that's the rare one. That's the irreparable one. That's the uncommon one. I know they didn't commit homicide, and I know that they've been completely rehabilitated because wardens and corrections officers have been writing letters saying, release this person. They were rehabilitated a long time ago. They've grown up. They're still asking for life without parole. They're asking for life without parole for people that they themselves offered plea bargains for. But the youth were too youthful to understand the consequences of rejecting that. So we said that it's not working in Michigan. And in fact, of the youth that have been resentenced, over half of them, the courts have issued life without parole sentences for. And it's partly because the Michigan statute is so problematic. It says courts can use aggravating factors, and it doesn't spell them out. So courts have said, well, and prosecutors and courts are saying, being 17 and a half is an aggravating factor, life without parole. Having a mental disability is an aggravating factor because you probably won't do so well on the outside, life without parole. Having a child out of wedlock before you went in prison is an aggravating factor. So the statute allows this whole unprincipled, arbitrary review. And Michigan has been resistant from the very beginning on this, and the resistance is continuing. So we've said to the court, there are now 39 states in this country that have abolished life without parole for juveniles or have not issued this sentence since the Miller Supreme Court decision. Enough. It's cruel, it's unusual, and the way it's being applied in Michigan shows that it should be categorically abolished.
Why do you believe prosecutors aren't stepping up to the challenge laid down by the U.S. Supreme Court?
I wouldn't want to put them all in one box. Mm-hmm. I think that there are some who just say the resources are too much and we're going to put it over here and we're going to say life without parole because we can now delay any of those hearings. I think that there are those who resisted the issue that children are different and continue to resist it. I think that there are those who tried these cases and stuck in their mind is a crime that happened, and therefore this is a just punishment, and they don't want to face the fact that those people have changed. So I think there are a bunch of different reasons, none of which do I believe are lawful or serve the public well.
Ann Arbor attorney Deborah LaBelle directs the Juvenile Life Without Parole Initiative with the ACLU.